knows how much last night could have meant to me, and how crappy I feel for screwing it all up. I give her a look. You saw my tweet. I'm referring to the one I made last night after I got home. Ugh, never going out again. I mean it. Katie, this is actually a good thing. You'll see, Morgan says. Now you know you can go out and interact with people our age and not everyone is a mean-ass bully. You're very likable. Even when you say dumb stuff about your dead cat to the hottest guy in school. Stop reminding me, I say, smacking myself in the forehead with my palm. I really think I might cry now. Besides, all last night proved is that I'm completely socially inept after being stuck in the house all these years. I refuse to embarrass myself like that ever again. Morgan pats my knee. So you're a little rusty. All the more reason to get back out there. Who knows what exciting thing might happen next time? There's not going to be a next time, I grumble. At least not with Charlie. You don't know that. I stop her before she can give me any untrue reasons for why things might possibly work out in the future. Yeah, I do. That was my shot. I'm never going to see him again. And I know that for a fact, because I'm never leaving the house again. My dad will be so relieved. Come on now, Morgan says. You don't really mean that. I cross my arms over my chest. Yes, I do. She stops trying to convince me I'm anything but a total fail at boys and life on the outside in general, and starts scrolling through her phone instead. Her jaw drops and she looks back up at me with saucer eyes. Have you checked out Dear Gabby today? My heart shifts into high gear. This can only mean one thing. I wrote a question to our favorite advice columnist months ago, thought about sending it every day, but refused until a moment of weakness, not to mention acute loneliness, got me late one night a few weeks ago. I never thought I'd actually get a response, so I have no idea how to deal with the news that my frighteningly honest and embarrassingly revealing thoughts are out there in a public forum for anyone to read. I head straight into denial. No, I mumble, fighting the urge to rip the phone out of Morgan's hands to assess the damage. I don't really follow Dear Gabby anymore. Morgan screws up her mouth and gives me her best sassy face. So you're telling me you didn't write this letter? And that some other random girl with a condition that sounds like XP who sounds exactly like you did? I refuse to meet her eyes and pretend to be totally engrossed in picking fuzzies off my baby blanket instead. Fine, this totally isn't you, she says, and starts reading the words I already know. My heart is hammering against my ribcage now, like it's trying to jump out and run away from this mortifying situation. Dear Gabby, first, the bad news. I have a life-threatening illness where my body can't deal with UV rays. Now, the good news. Other than flipping day and night, if I can't go out in the sun, I might as well enjoy the stars. I live a normal life for the most part. I play guitar, hang out with my BFF, kill it in school. I'm graduating with a 4.0 and I'm now taking college classes, and have a great relationship with my dad. The only thing missing is that special someone. I'm no different from anyone else when it comes to wanting to find a deep and magical connection. But barring dating a vampire who's centuries too old for me, what guy would ever be able to deal with the strange hours I keep? Not to mention the fact that we'd never be able to go on a beach vacation together. Despite everything I have working against me, there is someone I'd like to get to know better. He has no idea I exist, but I've watched him from a distance for years and have always been drawn to what appears to be his kindness and good humor. He's also ridiculously cute. So, Gabby, give it to me straight. Should I just give up on the idea of love, specifically with this boy? Or make a grand gesture to get his attention and hope he's cool with my genetic malfunction? Signed, Sunless But Not Hopeless. Morgan looks back up from her phone. I'm blushing from head to toe. I shake my head furiously. Nope. No, 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 not me. So I guess that also means you have no interest in Dear Gabby's reply then, huh? Morgan says, a little smile playing around her lips. I'm still trying to play it cool. I don't even know why. Clearly this letter was written by me. I mean, if you think it's a good one, I'll read it, I mumble. If you really want me to, I guess. She smirks. You're not going to like how Dear Gabby totally 100% agrees with my advice to you. Oh, I mean, that other girl with XP who's living a parallel life to yours. You have to, I mean, she has to get back out there and try again with Charlie. Dear Gabby didn't say that. I grab for Morgan's phone. She lets me have it. I start to read. Dear Sunless, there's a not-so-famous adage a New Jersey-born friend once passed on to me. Everyone has their shit sandwich. The only difference is some people aren't willing to talk about it. Believe me when I tell you, everyone comes into a relationship with baggage. And I mean everyone. Depression, dysfunction, debt, doubt, you name it. You just happen to have cells that can't process the sun and force you to be nocturnal. So what? Is that so much worse than anyone else's shit sandwich? You might not be able to meet him for an afternoon of mini golf, but dating mostly goes on at night anyway, which means you're not out of the running as a potential partner. Not by a long shot, pumpkin. Besides, it seems to me you're putting the cart before the horse here. You're already assuming this guy, who you've said appears to be full of great qualities, would surely reject you because of a circumstance beyond your control. Remember, while you may not be out and about during daylight hours, he most certainly goes out at night. So why not put yourself somewhere he's apt to be and give him a chance to prove you wrong? Start a conversation. See where it leads. Be casual, cool, calm, collected. Allow yourself to be surprised. I'm going to leave you with this thought. Actually, it's a challenge. Do not let this one aspect of your life, which doesn't define you, might I add, stop you from chasing your wildest dreams. Try putting a little more faith in yourself and your fellow humans, and our infinite capacity to love and forgive each other, in spite of our shortcomings. As for this boy, I say go for it. In fact, go for everything you want in this life. I hope you get everything you dream of and more. Love, Gabby. I ignore the part about not letting this one aspect of my life define me, because when you have a rare disease like XP, there's no getting away from it. But Gabby couldn't know about that. And try to let the solid advice sink in. But all I can think about is how vulnerable and exposed I feel. I pray Zoe Carmichael and her crew don't follow Dear Gabby. I'd hate to think how much more they'd be able to torture me with this kind of knowledge. The needing to have more faith in yourself and other people part, and our infinite capacity to love and forgive each other's shortcomings is great, right? Morgan says when I hand her back the phone. I almost teared up, and you know how much it takes for me to get emotional. Personally, I like the poop sandwich analogy, I say with a little smile. Dear Gabby really is the best. She's smart and honest and always tells it straight, even when you might not exactly want to hear it. and I still contend I didn't write that. Morgan eye-rolls me into the next century. Sure, she says. You know, it wouldn't kill you to talk to him again. You could, like, snap him a funny picture of one of your stuffed animals in a box and say you can hang out now that the funeral is over or something. I shake my head. Not even a chance. But he was so nice to you, Morgan protests. He liked your song and your voice and you. I think about that and come to the conclusion that Morgan's not completely off base. Charlie was really nice to me, despite all my awkwardness. He listened to my song and seemed to really appreciate it. He still wanted to talk to me even after I started making up insane lies to get away from him. He's pretty much the perfect guy. Which is why he doesn't need me and my problems in his life, I quickly conclude. Charlie Reed and I are just not in the cards, I tell her. Morgan gets off my bed and grabs my guitar, then hands it to me. You know what would be a great way to spend your time instead of being so stubborn? Write a song about last night. That's what Taylor Swift does. She has awkward interactions with boys and then writes amazing songs about them. So, maybe there is a silver lining to this mortifying situation after all. Everyone knows heartbreak is a great source of artistic inspiration. Oh, you mean like this? I take my guitar from Morgan and start improvising. I'm a crazy, pathetic person, don't know why. Couldn't even look him in the eye. I choked, I blew it, felt like I'm in a hurl. I'm the biggest dork in the whole wide world. I keep working on that, Morgan tells me. I walk over to my guitar case, a new idea for a song forming in my head. I'm totally going to write a country tune called My Fake Dead Cat Wants You to Come to His Funeral, which I will dedicate to Charlie Reed, and he will hear it on the radio and laugh and find my awkwardness adorable, and we'll start over. There's only one problem, though. My lyrics book isn't where it's supposed to be. Oh my God, my notebook! I gasp, my heart racing into full panic mode. I think I left it at the station. Every song I've ever written is in there. Can you go get it? I would, but my parakeet died and I have to sit Shiva for him. I smack her on the thigh. Seriously, please. She laughs. Of course, I'll pick it up this afternoon. Once Morgan takes off, I go back to wallowing in regrets of what might have been. Damn you, Charlie Reed. If only you'd been a total disappointment. I wouldn't care what an ass I made out of myself in front of you last night. Unfortunately, you were even more awesome than I'd imagined. Chapter 6. Two disconcerting things happen later that day. First, I catch my dad sneaking back into the house after going to see my XP doctor without me. Again. This is not the first time it's happened. Dad! I yell, rubbing my eyes and sitting up in bed when I hear his sneaky, creaky footsteps on the landing outside my bedroom. The clock reads 6 p.m. The appointment with my XP doctor was at 4. We were supposed to go together. WTF! Did you turn my alarm off? He hangs his head. You just look so peaceful sleeping there, and I thought you were probably overtired from playing at the station last night. So I made the executive decision to let you sleep in. More like you can't deal with me going out in the day ever, even though we know how to take the appropriate precautions, I say, raising an eyebrow and giving him an accusatory look. Not to mention you hate when Dr. Fleming tells it to me straight. He gives me a helpless little shrug. She's such a pessimist. You don't need to hear her negative messages, not when everything is going so well in your life. What life? I think. But that's the kind of thing I would never say to my dad. I pat the edge of my bed. He stares at it a bit, then reluctantly sits down. He looks like a little kid who got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. So, what did she say? I demand. Nothing, really. Wanted to know if there were any changes in your motor function or if you'd been exposed to the sun. Of course, I said no. I roll my wrist at him, like, I know there's more. Now out with it. What about the study at the University of Washington? A big smile plants itself on my dad's face.
It's coming along. Anytime now.
I know what this means, if only because it's happened so many times before. People aren't exactly flocking to fund research for a disease that affects only 1 in 1 million people. This drug trial most likely already ran out of money, and therefore won't even reach phase 2, which is when I'd have an opportunity to apply to be part of it. Or if by some miracle the study actually receives more funding, it would be even more of a miracle if I got chosen to participate in it. The futility of living with a disease no one cares or even knows about makes me want to scream. But that would be even more futile. It's an endless cycle of futility I'm dealing with here. Don't worry, I'm not holding my breath, I tell my dad. And then because I want to knock that fake smile off his face, I say, I'm sure Dr. Fleming also reminded you that any sun exposure at all will be the death of me, and that kids with my kind of XP rarely live past 20, am I right? Dad's face falls.
Of course not, he protests. And if she did, I certainly wouldn't listen. Maybe you have a disease that affects 1 in 1 million, Katie, but you really are 1 in 1 million. None of those statistics apply to you. We're going to beat this thing. Together.
Right, I say. But nothing ever changes when it comes to XP. There's not even a ray of hope. No new treatments. Just stay out of the sun until the disease somehow finally gets you. I'm a prisoner of my genetic code, which sucks totally and completely.
Katie, promise me you won't ever give up hope, he says, his voice cracking with emotion.
I look up and see Dad struggling to keep his composure. I wish we could actually talk about how little time I statistically have left and everything I want to accomplish during it. Come up with a game plan for quality of life, knowing that quantity is something we don't have much control over. But he just doesn't seem capable of it. I wonder, not for the first time, how my mom would have handled all of this. Since she died a few months before I was diagnosed, I'll never know, which means I'll always wonder. Would she have been better at facing the facts? I don't like to think about it either. My expiration date, that is. Or what dying might be like. But I do sometimes. Of course I do. Usually late at night, when it's darker than dark, and I'm the only one awake. In my house, on my block, in this city. I wonder if death is somehow similar and just as lonely. Like, just you, in the dark, awake and aware. I sincerely hope not, because that would be unnecessarily cruel. Like living my same life all over again, only for all of eternity. So I force a smile on my face instead and say, you know I'd never do that, Dad. We're fighters. I'm not going anywhere. He tries to smile back at me, but the color is still drained from his face. So I add, come on,
You couldn't get rid of me if you tried.
Good, because I don't think I could survive that, he says as he stands to leave.
And there's that honesty I said I wanted. It breaks my heart, along with my dad's. I'm catching up on the latest posts in one of the rare disease forums when Morgan sends me a text. Got the notebook, but I had to run to work. I left it at the ticket counter. I sigh. It's so Morgan not to have enough time to do both. I have an unproven theory that she has massive ADHD, that with all the twirling around she does in the desk chair in my room, that girl never sits still, and her absolute inability to be on time for anything. She claims I'm totally off base and that she's just a super energetic person who tries to cram too many activities into too few hours. We've agreed to disagree on this one. Still, I'm relieved I haven't lost basically an entire lifetime's worth of songwriting. And for all my grumbling inside my head, it's actually not a bad thing that I have to go get my notebook myself. I need to go for a walk and clear my head. Fresh air can cure almost anything. Even being the cause of your dad's deep sorrow and royally screwing up meeting the guy of your dreams. I pull on an oversized Seattle Supersonics sweatshirt, the now-defunct basketball team my dad was obsessed with back in the day, a pair of ratty old jeans, and my black Converse. Downstairs, I find my dad simultaneously working on his laptop, probably inputting grades on the latest project he assigned his students, yelling at the Mariners game on TV, and eating a sandwich so stacked with meat that it's at least 3 inches high. I'm going to run to the station to pick up my notebook. I left it there last night. Fred has it. Dad barely glances up at me. He's so engrossed in his sandwich.
Text me when you get there. Be careful and come right home. Love you,
he says through a mouthful of ham and cheese.
Sure. A quick back-and-forth trip is something he can handle, but any outing that holds the possibility that I might actually have some normal fun makes him a total basket case.
Love you more, I tell him, and even though I get frustrated with him, I mean it. He swallows in a big gulp, and before going in for another bite, he replies,
"Not possible."
As I step out onto the porch and close the door behind me, I briefly let myself wonder where Charlie is right now, what he's doing, and with whom, before I silently start berating myself all over again for the dead cat funeral debacle. It doesn't matter what Charlie's up to, because we certainly won't be hanging out anytime soon. I walk up the stairs to the train platform and head for the ticket counter. Fred's not in his usual spot, so I peek around the corner thinking he might have left my notebook on the bench that's in front of where I normally set up. I am right about that last part, at least. My notebook is on the bench, sitting in Charlie Reed's hands. He's flipping through it like it's a trashy gossip magazine that's already old news. I don't know what's worse— me babbling like an idiot when I finally meet the guy, or him manhandling what amounts to my most private thoughts. I am more humiliated than ever. I just have to figure out how to get the notebook back without him knowing I'm here, and I'll be on my way. I dart behind a wall and call Morgan at work.
Help, I whisper the minute she picks up.
Hello, Purdue Creamery, she trills. How's your second date with Charlie going?
Wait, what? I say, my mouth falling open. How did you know he was here?
I gave him your notebook for safekeeping, she says, like that's a perfectly okay thing to do.
I'm going to kill you, Morgan. How could you do this to me? I'm in a size XL supersonic sweatshirt. I didn't even brush my hair.
Morgan just laughs. Katie, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're super freaking hot. I can't even see you right now, and I know you look gorgeous. That's not the actual case, I hiss. And if you could see me, you'd agree. Katie, hold on a sec, she says. And then I hear her practically yell, Excuse me, can't you see I'm on the phone? I truly hope she's not talking to someone trying to order a cone. Morgan needs the extra cash from working at the ice cream shop for college. Getting herself fired would really be a problem. There aren't many other places to work in town, and it's small enough here that everyone would know she didn't leave her last job of her own accord. Please tell me that wasn't a customer, I say when she's back on the line. Oh, it was, she said. A customer, and then that annoying geek I work with, Garver. He asks me like 8 jillion questions a night. What do you like to do for fun, Morgan? What's your favorite flavor of ice cream, Morgan? How many siblings do you have, Morgan? What's your favorite TV show, Morgan? I swear, he's like a toddler with all his yapping. That's called being interested in your life. Leave it to her to hate any guy who shows an honest interest in her. Morgan tends to like bad boys who only ever talk about themselves. That's called conversation. It's called 100% annoying, she corrects me. And now, as for Charlie, just be yourself, Katie. He's a nice guy and he likes you. I can tell. Just promise me you'll try not to ramble, okay? By now, I've come to terms with the fact that talking to him is pretty much my only option if I ever want to see my notebook again. I sigh. Only if you try to be nice to this Garver guy. I feel sorry for him. Gross! No! She snorts. Call me after. She hangs up before I can say anything else. Left with no other choice, I take a deep breath and start walking over to Charlie. I'm almost in front of him when he looks up and sees me. I'm rewarded with the biggest, most welcoming smile I've ever seen. He's got these perfect lips, not too pillowy, not too thin, that look like they've never been chapped a day in their life. His teeth are perfectly straight and white. His eyes are so warm and friendly that they make me feel like I'm drowning in an ocean of kindness. I'm so dazzled, I even forget for a second that I'm mad he invaded my personal space. You are real, he says. I thought I might have dreamed you or something. Were you in the REM stage of sleep? I say. He looks unsure of how to respond to my lame joke, so I plow ahead. Just kidding. I mean, I know you weren't because I talked to you and you were awake, but that's when dreams happen because your brain activity is high, and your eyes are actually moving the whole time behind your eyelids, which is so weird it looks like a typewriter or something. I stop short, realizing I've done it yet again. Charlie is grinning at me. Not in a mean way, just like nice, amused. Anyway, thanks for babysitting my notebook, I tell him, trying to grab it. But he's gripping it too tightly. It stays in his possession. I still don't know your name. It's Katie. I guess that's the secret password, because he hands my notebook over. I scan the pages to make sure nothing's changed. It looks okay, but I just have to ask. Hey, you didn't actually read it, did you? Maybe a little. Now I'm mortified and mad all over again. Maybe the girls at Purdue High let him get away with anything just because he's cute, but that's not how I roll. Are you kidding me? What? His eyes are wide, like he's actually surprised I might not want him knowing what's in my journal. You can't just read people's stuff, I tell him, holding up the book as evidence. This is like my diary, you know? Is that your move? You do that grin thing and just because you're handsome, you think you can get away with invading people's privacy? Charlie grins that charming grin again.
You think I'm handsome?
Shame bursts up my cheeks and my ears. I'm blushing so hard I'm practically sweating. I'm hoping the fact that it's nighttime makes this less obvious.
Charlie holds up his hands. Hey, the invasion of privacy was minimal and necessary. You left so fast and I just wanted to see who it belonged to.
I stay silent. I'm not letting him off that easy.
I like that you handwrite things, he adds softly. It's old school. It's cool.
And just like that, I'm like totally in love with him again. I can't help it. My major crush is no match for my minor anger. A little smile curves up on my lips.
Well, thanks for not invading it too much, I guess.
I consider that maybe Morgan and dear Gabby were right. Maybe I do need to give Charlie, and other people my own age, a chance to surprise me. After all, tonight went relatively smoothly. I turn to leave, proud of myself for handling the situation so well without all the talk about dead cat funerals this time.
Did another cat die?
He calls after me as I go. I laugh and turn back around.
No, I'm just heading home.
Can I walk with you?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm giddy with happiness on the inside, but don't want to act anywhere near as enthusiastic as I'm feeling. Something tells me Charlie Reed has never had to work very hard to get a girl, and I need him to know I'm different. Not because of the XP, I mean, but just because I'm me.
Fine. Okay.
We walk slowly down the middle of the road. There aren't any cars around to worry about, so we're just meandering and making small talk. Everything's quiet, and our footsteps echo off the sleepy houses we pass. It's nice. Comfortable.
So you were homeschooled? Charlie repeats after I tell him.
That's wild.
I think about all those nights my dad drilled me on the periodic table, or the constellations, or Latin conjugations. Charlie's assessment of homeschooling is so off base, it's laughable.
It was kind of the exact opposite of wild, I tell him.
Then I add, my dad's really protective. Even though I figure by now that this has got to be pretty clear. Charlie looks left, right, up to the sky, then back at me.
He's not, like, watching us right now, is he?
Oh, totally. He's got a drone on us for sure.
He laughs, and then I laugh, mostly because I'm amazed I made him laugh. Who knew my life could go from the deepest depths of the dumps to this kind of amazing high all in a span of 24 hours?
So, I kind of need to know.
What did you think?
I ask.
Of your dad following us with the drone? It's kind of over the top, don't you think?
I crack up again. I meant, what did you think of the songs that you read without my permission?
He shrugs.
I don't know, really. You can't read a song. I'd have to hear them.
I stop walking. We're nearly to my house, and $10 says my dad is standing in the living room, alternately staring at his Find My iPhone app and out the front window, waiting for me to walk back through the door. The last thing I want to have to do is explain who Charlie is and why I'm out here with him.
Is this your house?
He asks, pointing at the one right in front of us. I gesture beyond where he thinks it is, a block farther up the hill.
No, it's that one, but my dad is a pretty light sleeper, and I'd rather not wake him up.
Charlie stares at where I live.
I can't believe we've never met before. I've probably skated by your house like every day on the way to practice.
Practice? I ask.
Even though, of course, I know what he's referring to.
How could I not know?
He always had that Purdue Penguins backpack, his kickboard, and all sorts of miscellaneous swim gear tucked under one arm as he rode by. Not to mention the fact that his name was in the local paper every week when he would break records at the latest meets during the season.
Yeah, I used to be a competitive swimmer.
And just like that, the adorable spark in his eyes is extinguished.
Used to be?
Another shrug.
Story for another day.
I switch gears, hoping he goes back to being Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky again. It's weird, right? That you know my house?
Sure.
Charlie still looks sad. The spell between us is broken. Maybe next time, if there is a next time, we'll get it back. As for now, I figure I should just disappear again.
Well, I gotta go. Thanks for walking me home, I tell him.
I get only 2 steps up the hill when Charlie says maybe the greatest 10 words in the English language.
Hey, Katie, would you maybe want to do something sometime?
I whirl back around.
Together, you mean?
Charlie laughs, back to his regular relaxed self.
No, I meant in general, by yourself, in life. Of course I meant us together.
I worry about how I'll explain my extenuating circumstances to Charlie, and if my dad would even agree to let me go out with him, and whether I could keep my rambling to a minimum even if he did. But then I realize, this is Charlie Reed, dream boy. I have to try, for Morgan and dear Gabby, but especially for me.
I'm pretty busy during the day. I'm really free only at night, I tell him, skipping over all the complicated parts.
I can be free at night, he says with an adorable little shrug.
Put your number here, then, I say, walking back over to him and flipping through my notebook to find a spot for him that's not full of doodles and lyrics and chords.
And then I see it. He's already printed his name neatly on the first available blank page. His digits are right next to it.
I stop short.
Oh, that was smooth. Charlie gives me another heart-melting grin.
Another one of my moves. I'm old school.
And then we just stand there smiling at each other. After a while, it gets kind of awkward that neither one of us is making a move to leave. So I say goodbye for real this time and run up the hill to my house.
I have a date with Charlie Reed.
I turn back around to wave goodnight to him and discover he's still standing there, watching me and smiling. Instead of feeling embarrassed this time, I feel all warm and toasty, like a fire has been lit inside me.
Me. Charlie Reed asked me out.
This is all new. Liking an actual real live Charlie and not just the figment of him outside my window. And him quite possibly liking me back. It's kind of scary, in a good way. I think I like it.
Chapter 7. Morgan bursts into my room the next afternoon right when I'm getting up.
Tell me everything!
I've of course already texted her what happened, but she wants to hear it from my mouth. She sprawls across my bed as I try to get all the words and Charlie's expressions just right. I describe the way the moon danced between us as we walked home, how he asked me on a date, and how his name and number were already in my notebook. So it must have been premeditated, not just like a whim or worse, a mistake. She's grinning at me, and I'm grinning at her, and I feel stupid, but stupidly happy, too.
That's so romantic, it disgusts me, she says when I finish.
I sigh and throw a hand over my heart. It's beating faster than normal, even a day later. I know. It was perfect. Morgan sits up and grabs my hand. So he was cool about your XP, huh? I had a feeling about him. I knew he wouldn't be a jerk about it. That's the only reason I let him give you back your notebook, I swear. I never would have let him put his grubby paws on it otherwise. I start biting a fingernail. I'm trying to be casual and avoid telling her the truth. But Morgan knows me way too well. No, Katie, come on now, she groans. You didn't tell him? You, like, think he's not gonna find out when you start melting in front of him like the Wicked Witch of the West? Boys are dumb, but not that dumb. I wince. It didn't come up. What do you mean it didn't come up? Morgan yells. I clap a hand over her mouth. Dad definitely does not need to know I, A, like a boy, who, B, asked me to hang out with him after, C, I neglected to tell him about my craptastic medical condition. She sticks her tongue out and starts licking my hand until I drop it from her face. I mean, I say in a whisper, hoping she'll get the hint to tone it down in here. Didn't ask me if I had a genetic disorder where sunlight will kill me, and I did not say yes. Morgan starts to say something else, but I jump back in before she can start giving me a hard time again. Listen to me. When people find out you're sick, you stop being a person and become like a cause. It ruins everything. For once in her life, Morgan can't think of a snappy comeback. She just nudges me with her foot. I understand she means, dude, I know. It sucks. I give her a little smile because I know she knows, at least as best she can. She sees how much I struggle with not being able to do the things I want to do. But we both know there's not a damn thing either of us can do about it. I promise I'll tell him the next time I see him, okay? Not that I know when that will be. Oh, I do, Morgan tells me, jumping off my bed. You know the annoying guy who works with me at the ice cream shop? The nerdy one you hate, who is also clearly in love with you? Ew, will you stop saying that? She protests. And yes, Garver. His parents are out of town and he's throwing a party tonight and he told me to bring friends. So I'm going to bring you and you're going to bring Charlie. Tonight? I'm so not prepared for this. I need some time to find just the right outfit, maybe get a haircut, and I don't know, buy some makeup and figure out how to apply it since I don't usually go anywhere that would require a fancy face and have zero clue where to start. What? No, 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 I can't. That's not... Don't I have to wait for him to call me or something? Totally, Morgan nods. And then his squire will send a note via pigeon asking if you'd like to merge your kingdoms. What is this, 18th century England? You're a hot, young, badass woman in charge of her own life, and you text him whenever you damn well please. She tosses me my phone. Just be confident. Give him the facts. I stare at the phone. My mind is as blank as the screen. There's no way I'm doing this. If you don't text him, I will, Morgan warns. I know she'll make good on the threat. So I start typing. I go with the first thing I can think of, no editing or second-guessing myself. Hey, my friend is having a party tonight if you want to come. I hit send before I can chicken out. But play a little hard to get. Morgan says the minute my message shoots into the stratosphere. Fine. I type some more. I don't care if you come or not. Send. There. All better. And make sure he knows he's not the only reason you're going, she continues. I have lots of friends, I quickly add. Geez, why does this have to be so complicated? Morgan grabs my phone and reads my masterpiece. She groans.
What?
Remember the dead cat? I nod. This is the same, she tells me.
No, it's not!
I screech.
He's going to think that not only do you not like him, but you actually hate him, Morgan tells me.
Fix it then! Before she can start cleaning up my mess, my phone buzzes. Morgan glances at it and then back up at me. She's grinning.
Never mind. Well played, my friend. Well played.
What? I'm more confused than ever.
I seriously don't understand how any of this works.
She holds up my phone so I can read the screen. There's Charlie's reply. I'm in. I can't stop smiling. I don't know how it worked or why, but it did.
Now we have to convince my dad to actually let me go, I whisper, aiming a thumb at my closed door.
Leave it to me, Morgan says, and runs out of my room to talk to him. I catch up with her just in time to hear him saying,
I don't think it's a good idea, Morgan. I don't know the parents. We don't know what kind of party it is. Katie doesn't even know these kids.
He's rushing around the kitchen, emptying the dishwasher, putting away dishes, straightening up the cutlery drawer. Anything but making actual eye contact.
I know Garver, Morgan protests. I work with him. He's a complete goober. This is going to be a tame, safe, parent-friendly party.
My dad stops the busy work for a second, a smile lighting up his formerly worried face.
That sounds so boring. How about I order Chinese and put on Netflix?
Dad, I bark. It comes out harsher than I intended it to. My father's face crumples. I can't stand how his entire existence seems to hinge on protecting me from the most benign things on the planet. I'm 18, not a toddler who might go barreling into a glass coffee table or tumble down the stairs if she's left to her own devices too long. The sun won't get me. I can go to a nerdy party without disaster striking. I need him to understand this.
I'm a good kid. You know I'm not going to do anything crazy, I continue, more gently this time. But if I stay here for one more night listening to everyone else living their life outside my window, I might go crazy.
My voice cracks and I have to pinch myself so I don't start crying. I normally work very hard at not feeling sorry for myself and being grateful for what I have. But now that I've gotten the teensiest, tiniest taste of normal, it's like there's no turning back. I need more than just the four walls of my bedroom and my guitar to be happy. I need an actual life. Please, please let me feel normal. I'm not above begging to get what I want, which is to spend more time with Charlie Reed. I'll text you every hour, and tomorrow we can order Too Much Lo Mein and have a movie marathon. My dad sighs and opens his mouth. I'm sure there's some other lame but well-meaning excuse on the tip of his tongue about why I shouldn't go. I preempt it by throwing my arms around him and giving him a huge bear hug.
Thank you, thank you. You're the best dad in the world.
If you're saying that, then I'm definitely making the wrong decision, he mutters.
Still, he doesn't say no. So I grab Morgan's hand and we run up to my room before he can change his mind. My phone buzzes along the way.
Okay, Charlie says he'll meet us at Garver's at 8, I tell Morgan.
She gasps.
We gotta get ready.
I check my watch. We have 3 hours.
Oh my God, we're already behind.
This is a weird turn of events, since Morgan is about the lowest maintenance person in the world. Normally, she wears jeans and a casual t-shirt, then slaps a knit beanie on her head, and voila, she's out the door. Who are you and what have you done with my best friend?
Dude, you are meeting up with the guy you've lusted after for a decade.
I raise my eyebrows. I hardly think I was lusting after him when I was 8 years old. That's not even a thought 8-year-olds have.
Semantics, she says with a wave of her hand. You are hooking up with a guy you've loved for more than 10 years.
Who said anything about hooking up? I literally have zero experience in that department, and it's not like I'm going to go from absolutely nothing to positively everything just because my dad is finally letting me go to a party.
I wasn't implying you have to do anything you don't want to do, Morgan says. Though I do think it would be a total waste for a gorgeous girl like you to have to die a virgin.
Oh my God, Morgan! I whisper scream. I am not losing my virginity to a guy I've talked to exactly twice in my life. And thanks for the vote of confidence, but I'm not planning on dying anytime soon either.
An awkward moment passes. We have these a lot because even though we basically tell each other everything, we leave a lot unsaid.
Look, all I'm saying is tonight is a big deal, she tells me. This is like what you've always dreamed of. You just said it to your dad. You get to be normal for once. But I happen to think you've waited too long to settle for just normal. Tonight is going to be fan-fucking-tastic, and so are you.
It is? I am?
She nods.
Yep, no doubt.
Morgan walks over to my closet and starts rifling through it. She doesn't have a lot to work with. Honestly, most days, I sit around in leggings and a sweatshirt, because why not be comfy if you're not going anywhere? Is this the sum total of your clothing? She calls from inside, her voice echoing against the walls.
Yeah, unless you count the 2 dresses I ordered when I thought my dad was going to let me go to that concert with you in Seattle. But then he said no because we'd have to leave before the sun went down, I tell her. I keep forgetting to ask him to send them back, probably wishful thinking that he was going to change his mind.
Morgan pops her head back out of the closet. Where are they? She demands.
And why did you need 2? Planning a wardrobe change so the paparazzi wouldn't catch you wearing the same thing for more than an hour at